The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by Alumni Ventures. Invest with confidence. Discover the power of venture investing with Alumni Ventures, America's largest venture firm for individual investors. Learn more at av.vc.
Hey, before we get started, I just wanted to make a quick plug for my weekly newsletter. It's totally free, and it's a great way to get the best, most useful ideas from nonfiction without having to, you know, read a ton of books. I do that for you, along with my team, and we highlight the ideas that we think will change your life for the better. To sign up, use the link in the episode notes or go to Next Big Idea on LinkedIn. Thanks. Now on with the show.
LinkedIn presents.
When you put creativity under the gun and you start rushing people, all sorts of bad things happen, because if you dig into research on creativity, it's a fundamentally inefficient process. It entails a lot of dead ends, a lot of failure, actually constructive conflicts, a lot of sort of arguing, and that's if you're doing it right.
Hi, this is the Next Big Idea Daily. I'm your host, Michael Kovnat, and it's Monday. How much do you know about friction? You probably learned about it in physics class, but how much do you know about it in the context of business? Every large organization encounters friction, forces that make it harder, more complicated, or simply impossible to get things done. But there are ways you can overcome friction or even use it for your own benefit. To explain how to do this, we're joined by Robert I. Sutton, co-author with Huggy Rao of The Friction Project, How Smart Leaders Make the Right Things Easier and the Wrong Things Harder. Robert is a Stanford professor, organizational researcher, and best-selling author. He was named as one of 10 B-School All-Stars by Business Week and is an IDEO Fellow. Here he is to share the big ideas from his book.
When we see leaders and teams that are especially good about, if you will, making the right things easy and the wrong things hard, they have an attitude that we call the trustees mindset. They see themselves as trustees of others' time. One of our colleagues, Jeremy Utley, we were preparing a class for 60 executives, and Jeremy sort of stood up in the middle of the meeting and he said, "I hate wasting other people's time." That, to me, is just literally the embodiment of the trustees' mindset. That's not a one-and-done situation. So we wrote an article about how Dropbox had this kind of amazing intervention where they removed standing meetings from everybody's calendar, and then they couldn't put the new meetings back in for about a week, and they made all these new rules and so forth that you should keep meetings as small as possible. You should even leave a meeting if it wasn't working. And they did reduce the number of unnecessary meetings, but by the time when we wrote it up, it was actually for Inc., we were talking to Drew Houston, the CEO, and we said, "How's it going?" He said, "It's worse than ever. It's like mowing the lawn. You've got to do it over and over again with discipline, or you never fix anything." So that's the first lesson, is this notion of adopting the trustees mindset, and it's like mowing the lawn. It's a way of life. It's a discipline. When we see people who are really skilled, organizations that are really skilled at especially fighting bad friction, they adopt what we call the subtraction mindset. And in fact, this is not something that comes natural to human beings. A series of studies done by researchers from the University of Virginia shows that we as human beings, we're actually naturally prone to add things to make life more complex, to solve problems, anything from planning a vacation to fixing a Lego model to fixing a university. That's sort of our natural tendency. And also, the organizations we studied make this problem worse by rewarding people who build fiefdoms, who start initiatives, who add software, and not rewarding people who reduce complexity. That's the bad news. The good news is that there's a whole bunch of things in the organizations that we studied that people do to live the subtraction mindset. A great example, at Hawaii Pacific Medical, which is the largest healthcare system in Hawaii, there was a woman named Dr. Melinda Ashton, and she was concerned about all of the excessive time that doctors, nurses, and so forth were spending on the electronic patient record system as opposed to focusing on patients directly. And so she started something she called the Get Rid of Stupid Stuff campaign and had people make suggestions from throughout the system of parts of the electronic record system that could be subtracted or made more simple. As she described it, as parts that were poorly designed, unnecessary, or just plain stupid. People in the system suggested 188 subtraction targets, and her team actually made 87 improvements. And there was one, just to give you one little example, they eliminated one mouse click that was made for every patient as nurses and nurse assistants were making rounds. And just that one little click they removed, it saved 24 seconds per click and approximately 1,700 nursing hours per month at their four hospitals. Watch your language to avoid using what Huggy and I call jargon monoxide. And our argument is that all sorts of destructive friction is caused when people routinely use language that's overly complex or incomprehensible. And just to give you one little example, we describe in the book the jargon mishmash syndrome. The jargon mishmash syndrome is when a certain kind of language or phrase means so many things to so many different people that it actually is meaningless. We're kind of taking a cue from Nobel Prize winner Daniel Kahneman. He talks about noise being a really big problem when it comes to figuring out what is the correct action. So he would describe noise as a random scatter of ideas. And the example that we use in the Friction Project to illustrate noise is a speech that was given by an Australian agile consultant. And what this fellow did, he was very proud. You can find this on the web. He was able to give a 40-minute speech where he went through 40 different kinds of agile and everything from holacracy to Scrum to Deming, all these different things that, frankly, I've never heard of. And my perspective is that if under the tent of agile, there's 40 different meanings of the word agile, it means 40 different things at least to different people. So therefore, it means nothing. And when you get in a situation where, if you will, the jargon mishmash syndrome, the only solution Huggy and I can think of is, since there's not going to be some all-powerful jargon police, you just sort of got to kind of stop using it. And my advocacy is let's stop using the word agile because it means so many things to so many people that it means nothing. So friction fixers, they not only try to banish bad friction, they look at things that ought to be difficult, slow, or impossible. And just to give you one key example, if you look at research on creativity, there's a very strong argument, and Teresa Mabile from Harvard Business School is probably the leading person here who's done this research, that as she puts it, when you put creativity under the gun and you start rushing people, all sorts of bad things happen because if you dig into research on creativity, it's a fundamentally inefficient process. It entails a lot of dead ends, a lot of failure, actually constructive conflicts, a lot of sort of arguing, and that's if you're doing it right. So the lesson here is Jerry Seinfeld, you know, the famous comedian and co-creator of the famous TV show Seinfeld says, when it comes to comedy, the hard way is the right way. There's no natural way to make it efficient. When he prepares a show, he will try hundreds and hundreds of jokes, and maybe 1 or 2% will survive. Okay, so that leads us to our last lesson about friction fixing. And one of the things that we've learned in the process of watching what it takes to fix friction, the best leaders are kind of two minds. Their first perspective is they're really focused on being good organizational designers, on doing things like removing bad procedures, making, say, unethical or dumb things impossible to do. So they're constantly thinking about ways to clean up the mess, the organization design, but they also are of another mind, which is they know that in many cases there will be procedures, there will be laws, there will be rules, there'll actually be difficult stretches where people are confused. And like all organizational life, being a friction fixer means being in messy situations. So what great leaders do, And the person we quote in the book, her name is Clara Shai. She's the CEO of AI at Salesforce, amazingly accomplished woman. And she says that when she launches something new, she tells people that they've got to embrace the mess. And she uses this approach. She calls it separation of concerns, which is from computer science, which is that she essentially has one team that focuses on implementing things that are working and going well. And she has another team whose job is to sort of try to clean up the mess. So that's our final insight when it comes to friction fixing, that you as a leader, as a friction fixer, as a trustee of others' time, you kind of got to do two things at once, help people clean up the mess, and at the same time, keep them moving ahead, even though things are difficult.
All right, embrace the mess, people. That's a message we can get behind here at the Next Big Idea Daily. Listen, one great way to keep on top of the messes in your own life, become a member of the Next Big Idea Club. We've got a great app, a box subscription service, an online community, and tons of other great stuff. You can find out more at nextbigideaclub.com and use the code DAILY for a special discount. And come on back tomorrow to hear some ideas from The Neuroscience of You, How Every Brain is Different and How to Understand Yours by Chantel Pratt. I'm Michael Kovnat. See you tomorrow.